Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixels and Profits, episode number 6. Today, we're doing something a little bit different, where we go super deep and into fine detail on Take-Two Interactive, Take Deuce. Our focus as Pixels and Profits will be on the business and financial analysis of the company. And joining us today to discuss Take-Two, we have, we're joined by the Eric Kress from Deconstructor Fund Podcast, principal at Gossamer Consulting. And besides Eric, again with us today, you have the Pixel Brothers, myself, Joseph Kim, Matthew Contraman, and Brian Peganoff. Welcome back, guys. And just to get things kicked off a little bit, I was wondering what's going on. Like, what games are you playing? And before we get into like the numbers and the details, what are you guys up to? Today's episode is sponsored by Data.ai to access estimates for rankings, downloads, revenue, usage, or engagement for millions of apps on the App Store and Google Play. Sign up for Data.ai. Matthew, what are you doing?
You picked the wrong person to call with. I've been pretty boring. I'm like nose deep in like licensing exams right now. So like I actually haven't played Diablo or Final Fantasy yet. It's all on my list. I'll get there when I'm done with this, but I mean, in the real world, I've been playing golf. You know, okay. I got my handicap down another point. So that's
nice.
Dude, Brian, what kind of self-respecting gamer are you? Like, dude, this is like the best year of games ever, and you're out on the golf course?
I'm outside. Yeah, hate me for being outside.
Stop it!
Stop. Denver weather.
No. I am playing Remnant 2, which I'm having a lot of fun with. It's a co-op shooter. It's a lot different than the first title. So it's Gearbox published, owned by Embracer. A lot of fun. It's co-op, like I said, co-op PvP shooter or PvE shooter. It's got like some Destiny vibes to it and a little bit of like Dark Souls. It's got those hard puzzles in there mixed in. But yeah, one of the better games I played in a while.
Okay.
What about you, Eric?
I did start Remnant 2. I only got for like the first like 20 minutes, but I've just been knee deep in Diablo. So I'm on season one. I just leveled 50 at season one. So just trying to hit that grind. This is my kind of looter shooter, dude. Just like you know, kill loot, continue type thing. So loving it.
Nice. All right, well, maybe we jump right in. And Brian, maybe you can go over the company fundamentals, aka fundies, as you would call it.
Yeah, so Take-Two, publicly traded video game publisher and developer with a market cap of about $25 billion. That makes it one of the largest and most diversified after Activision, which is $65 billion, and EA at $37 billion. So Take-Two reports GAAP revenue and net bookings alongside GAAP EPS. And as we know, public market valuations for gaming names can take multiple different forms, but historically, Take-Two ebbs and flows off forward buy-side expectations on adjusted EPS. So the investment community takes inputs from management and takes out the impact of non-recurring items, so Take-Two does not guide to adjusted EPS. The next earnings call is going to be on August 8th, and that is fiscal first quarter 2024. So the fiscal year runs from April to March. So fiscal Q4 of 25 will report in April of 25, closing in March. And just as a refresher, net bookings is a measure of products and services sold in minus things like discounts and returns. So Take-Two did about $5.3 billion in 2023 with $833 million in EBITDA and $3.46 in adjusted EPS. And for fiscal 24, they've guided to $5.5 billion net bookings driven by things like GTA Online, their hyper-casual portfolio, which was formerly called Rollick, Zynga Midcore, and Red Dead Redemption. OpEx was about $3.4 billion, down 1% year-on-year on lower UA. Zynga synergies offset by things like higher stock comp, personnel expenses, which is just shorthand for hiring, and IT costs. And that results in a GAAP net loss of $500 million, or roughly negative $3 per share. Now, last quarter, management noted that fiscal 25, which is just a, you know, calendar 24, is a highly anticipated year for the company, touting an incredibly robust pipeline of products. Alongside this, they offered guidance of $8 billion in net bookings and greater than $1 billion in operating cash flow. Moreover, they suggested year-on-year growth for fiscal 26, which is calendar 25. And the stock ripped about 10, 11% the day after and has continued marching higher since then. So, you know, with that as context, Take-Two is trading at about 3.1 forward bookings and call it like low 20s times forward OCF. So the buy side debate right now is how much that $8 billion guide translates into adjusted EPS. So again, a bunch of moving parts there, which for the bulls is somewhere in the $7 to $8 range. The stock is at $150 last I checked. And so we're looking at roughly 18 to 21 times forward EPS. So the obvious question here and the delicate controversy is how much how the company is going to grow, $2.5 billion incrementally year on year, especially since management didn't really call out a GTA 6 timeline, which is, you know, the biggest proxy for the stock historically. So, Joe and Matt are going to go into the oodles of IP that Take-Two has. But the big question is that achievable without GTA 6? And, you know, what are we missing? There's not a huge amount of color in the financial disclosures around, you know, what sorts of games are coming out, just that there is a buttload of games coming out. I'll pass it over to JK.
Yeah. So, I mean, just for the audience, because you went over a lot of numbers, I think it's really important to highlight like the big change here in terms of the guidance, right? And so going from 5.5 billion to 8 billion is a pretty massive gap. And so when you think about, you know, what could possibly drive that much additional bookings? I think we got to think it's, you know, I've been looking at the Zynga or the new Zynga portfolio. It's, and I'd love to hear from Eric, but I feel like it's certainly not coming from mobile. You guys could speak to other parts of the business, but I think like, and I think probably everybody thinks this has got to be GTA 6. And I don't know. I mean, Eric, let's hear what you think. Like, what is your opinion on this?
So this is like classic Strauss. Now, I've been covering this company for, 20 years now, it seems. And this is like classic Strauss. Like, don't look here, look over there, right? This year is an absolute fucking train wreck, right? So they're declining in revenue. Fucking Zynga's a shithole, shit show. Everything is falling apart and they have no product, right, to release. You know what, in the middle of a cycle when the console business is as hot as it ever could be, they don't have one game coming out this year. I mean, it's actually almost unforgivable, right? That they don't really have any strategy whatsoever, right, this year. And we're going to talk about it later. The Zynga acquisition was probably the worst acquisition ever made in video games, right? And so what he did was he basically said, look, this year sucks, but wait. Next year, we're going to do like a gajillion dollars in revenue. And so everyone's like, oh, God, that must be the GTA year. And there he goes, right? He's just managing Wall Street's expectations absolutely flawlessly, right? And so the stock is almost getting close to the all-time high right now in anticipation of that. And that's it. And so the only thing that can really fill the gap, to answer your question, is GTA. So releasing next year. You know, everything else is kind of small, right? So they have BioShock, they have Judas from Ken Levine. You know, basically that's the same game from different studios. Revenue potential at 5-6 million, 7 million units, maybe, right? Maybe it can outperform. I don't know. That's it. GTA next year. And my gut tells me, honestly, if you were gun to my head right now, that they. We'll probably push it to fiscal 20 or calendar 26, right? Or sorry, calendar 25.
They have a little bit of leeway there too, just because of the slippage in fiscal year. So they could technically launch GTA ahead of March and still have that contribute towards next year's fiscal.
Yeah,
you think it comes out for the holidays? That's kind of the binge everyone. No?
No. I think it comes out in May of 2025, if I were to just, you know, educated guess. Right. So they'll push it
out. You have an exceptional year the year after.
Right. And no one cares. No one will care. Right.
If it's FY25 or FY26, they're just going to look at the flashy. We'll talk about it later, but like I'm already seeing estimates for 35 million plus units in the first 12 months. Like this game is going to do gangbusters and be one of the biggest video game releases of all time.
It's kind of like CD Projekt Red, except it actually works.
and they won't release it broken. They'll wait because they know that they can, because it doesn't matter when they release it.
So yeah, I guess we're circling back on that whole thing about Zynga. Like, what do you think the position of the stock would be right now if they hadn't made that transaction, right? Because I think that we had some benefits of Zynga was this whole smoothing factor and maybe some incremental profitability to even out these troughs. Like, it's no longer just a trough and peak EPS name. It has some continuity to it. But do you think they're worse off?
I think in some sense they are. I mean, this is like kind of a albatross around their neck of declining revenue and earnings. So unlike if you compare this to the King acquisition, was absolutely brilliant, right? Where they bought it for like, I think at the time they bought it for like 10 times earnings and they were trading at 20 times. And so they bought this thing and it didn't grow that much, right? It basically was like flatline, declining a little bit, but the fucking cash flows were insane. And so they did this total multiple arbitrage and it basically increased the valuation of the company. This is almost the opposite of that, right? Where the multiple that they paid was ridiculously high for a business that was declining. And the stock was at $6 for a reason. They bought it for 12, right? And they're in perpetual decline. And we'll talk about this later, but they are continuing to decline when the market's kind of stabilizing, which is a little bit frightening, you know, and they have no pipeline. So
do you think it's a factor of King being super casual and Zynga being super mid hardcore?
I think that's part of it with IDFA and all these other troubles with the mobile market, which is not a very good place to be right now. King was also like two products that mattered, right? So they reinvested all their efforts and money ultimately into the two products and did an absolutely insane job of managing the live ops. And then on top of that, they added advertising, which took them a long, long time, but that's just been just paying huge dividends. It was just a different and a much better business, frankly, than Zynga. And I think Bobby did a much better job of buying it at the right time and then also managing it moving forward.
So. A completely different era in mobile gaming too.
That too. We don't have this Apple ecosystem in which Apple is destroying the ecosystem with their nonsense, you know.
It's turning into a King Love Fest. We have to steer back on target here.
Right.
So let's steer back on target. Yeah. So I'm going to do an overview of Rockstar and take 2K sides of the business, and then I'll pass it to...
Right. Or Matthew, just before you start, just for the audience, maybe we could also let them understand. So for you guys, to understand Take-Two, you got to think about it in terms of like four labels, which is Rockstar Games, 2K, this thing called Private Division, which maybe Matthew, you can talk about a little bit as well, and then Zynga, which is like where all the mobiles it sits today. So go ahead, Matthew. Rockstar 2K.
So Rockstar 2K and Private Division. I'll start with Private Division because it's the easiest. It's kind of irrelevant from a financial perspective. Like if you're into indie games, they release some cool games, but it doesn't really make any material amounts of money for Take-Two. So it's not really relevant to the investment conversation. But prior to the acquisition of Zynga, you know, Take-Two was largely a console and to a lesser degree, PC developer and publisher split across its 2K and Rockstar labels, right? So we start with the 2K side of the business, and the largest franchises by bookings there, NBA 2K is the biggest. It's 135 million units sold lifetime, the latest installment eclipsing 11 million units, and that's on pace to be another record year for NBA 2K. It, you know, continues to grow every year, just like a lot of the sports franchises do across the console ecosystem. Borderlands is in there, 80 million units lifetime. Borderlands 3 sold 17 million units. Borderlands 2 sold 27 million units. And that is the highest selling game in 2K history. You have Civilization in there, 67 million units, BioShock, 42 million units. We talked about a new BioShock coming. And you got the other sports games in there like WWE and PGA golf, which I know Eric Kress wants to do 30 minutes talking about the competitive landscape for golf games. And then moving to Rockstar, which is a bit more than half of net bookings for the overall company. The key franchise obviously are GTA. Kind of always talk about how powerful GTA and GTA Online is, but it's always just nice to actually see the numbers. The entire franchise historically has sold over 400 million units, which I think is just an insane number to think about. GTA 5 specifically has crossed 180 million units across three different console generations. So yes, I'm one of the people who bought GTA 5 on like six different devices at this point, but you know, it's still insane that they've sold 180 million units. GTA Online is a big part of the story, and that drives a lot of revenue now. And then Red Dead Redemption is like the other kind of big IP in there, which has sold 75 million units lifetime, with Red Dead Redemption 2 reaching 53. And there's a bunch of smaller IPs in there, like Max Payne, LA Noire, and Midnight Club. The only thing I'll mention from Private Division that's notable, just because it's a personal favorite game of mine, is The Outer Worlds. It's a really kind of fun looter shooter RPG game, if you're into that. And oddly enough, they're making a sequel, and Private Division is still publishing it, even though the developer Obsidian got bought by Xbox. So it's an Xbox game being published by Private Division. It's all a little bit weird. Anyways, Eric, your thoughts on just kind of like the core business pre-Zynga and how that's trending?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, from an investment perspective, I think their business is very, very simple. It's basically GTA and 2K. You know, kind of everything else is a footnote to some degree. Like, it adds something here and there. Like, BioShock is coming again. And that used to be a big franchise, but we haven't seen that for a long, long time. Civ is like once every 4 years, which is a great PC game, which adds some profitability, but it's not that big of a game. Judas is in the works from Levine, but I think it's not going to make too much money. It's going to basically, I think, be a loser given how long it's been taken to development. And then they had this absolutely ridiculous non-core sports strategy, some like kids sports division, which was the dumbest like fever dream of someone at 2K that I've ever heard of. It's like a casual football game, a tennis game, casual basketball game. You know, then the Lego 2K drive was kind of dumb, although I think that did okay, but still, it's just dumb. It's just not smart. And then the other one that actually is interesting is Borderlands, which is a big franchise for them. But Randy Pitchford kind of, I think, has squandered this franchise a little bit. I don't think they really innovated enough. They basically made the same game they have forever. The same experience over and over again. So it's not really staying contemporary with things like Destiny and Division and others. And now it's part of Embracer, and that place is just blowing up. So I don't know. It's really unclear as whether or not they can execute well against that. But that also could be coming this generation. So I guess my whole thinking is, if you really kind of understand what's going to happen with GTA and 2K, you can make a justifiable case for investing in this company. Everything else is just kind of noise to some degree. And so I think that's why investors are getting excited again, because of GTA's coming.
I will also note, I think that they might also be trying to dip their toes in the shooter space. They hired Michael Condrey to build a new studio out in San Fran. I mean, I don't know what that looks like in like 3 years out, but you know, you don't hire a COD, the former head of Sledgehammer Games, and a COD guy if you're not going to build a shooter, right?
No. The other thing worth noting with the content you guys have laid out with the investment case for just Rockstar and 2K is those two studios are the ones that have adapted their games to move away from just straight up box sales, right? BioShock hasn't. So that's like, it adds a lot of chop and volatility to the stock, which is already very present. If Borderlands, that's one of my favorite games of all time. Borderlands 2 was just an absolute masterpiece. But like Eric said, like, they didn't update graphic fidelity or gameplay or much else. It's just the same kind of thing. And if you don't adapt, you kind of get stuck in that similar kind of units mode where you sell in 10, 12, maybe 19 million units for a great game, but you're not going to get to the 30, 40, 50 that would drive a incremental increase in the stock. And that franchise, for what it's worth, could. And especially if it can monetize post-release with better things than just like, you know, new story packs and characters, making it a true live service game, that could be pretty special.
And that's actually kind of what I was alluding to. That was what their opportunity was, right? Borderlands actually lends itself perfectly to the new world order of software as a service, live ops, content cadence, you know, microtransactions, all the stuff, you know, and cosmetics and non-cosmetics. Like, they could have done anything with that franchise. It was like tabula rasa from the perspective of what people perceive that game to be, which is a looter shooter, right? Instead, they made the same fucking game they did in Borderlands 2. And yeah, look, people love that, right? And they played, but that's not lending themselves to upside long-term. And at the end of the day, I don't know if it's Randy, maybe he just doesn't have, I mean, he's kind of a lunatic, right? So like, I don't know if he has that kind of vision for that franchise. And they haven't really built anything else successful since then. So I don't know. If he's a purist about it and he just keeps building the same thing, I just don't think you can expect any better results is kind of what my thinking is. But you're right. It does have lots of opportunity.
Super.
But then again, with this whole Embracer thing, like who the hell knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, it's a powder keg. Like there's no way he's sticking around with Embracer at like 10% of the value when he was acquired, right? You know? So it'll be interesting to see how that all evolves. And frankly, the best thing for them to do to be somehow is to buy them out, right? If I think Take-Two should be buying Randy and his team from Embracer because they need the cash, right? So that could be something that happens.
Yeah,
that would be bullish.
If I remember the details of the Gearbox acquisition as well, I think most of it was back end loaded, right? In terms of
on the stock.
So
that's where those acquisitions are.
That definitely sounds like an interesting move. If definitely interesting possibility. All right, so let's talk mobile, Zynga. All right, and this one is very interesting. It is a huge boost for Take-Two in terms of like mobile reach and revenue. And there does seem to have been a consolidation in which Take-Two mobile games, which included Social Point, Playdots, and Nordeus, are now kind of all under the Zynga label. And Brian mentioned that Take-Two did about $5.3 billion in bookings the last fiscal, and now Zynga and all the mobile comprise the majority of revenue, about $2.5 billion of that $5.3 billion. And in terms of titles, the new Zynga label has key titles like CSR Racing, Dragon City, Empires and Puzzles, Farmville, Golf Rival, Harry Potter, Puzzles and Spells, Merge Dragons, Merge Magic, Monster Legends, Toon Blast, Top 11, Toy Blast, Two Dots, Words with Friends, and Zynga Poker. There's also a bunch of hyper-casual titles, which still seems to be driving a ton of downloads. Surprisingly, like downloads seem to be actually trending up with games like Fill the Fridge, Parking Jam 3D, Pressure Washing Run, and Pull the Pin. But on a revenue basis, and I was just looking at the top 18 titles from data.ai, the revenue does seem to be trending downward, which is not a good good direction for it to be moving in. And I do think, Eric, to your point, you mentioned IDFA deprecation. I think that a lot of the impact of IDFA deprecation has been blunted by fingerprinting. And so for me, the big question is going to be what happens in not necessarily an IDFA post-IDFA deprecation world, but a post-fingerprinting world. And what happens in terms of ad revenues? What happens in terms of well-based games like Empires and Puzzles? I guess we'll find out. I think that, just looking at some analysis from Wall Street, it does seem like they are counting on mobile to contribute to some degree in terms of additional bookings, maybe 100, 200 million or so. So yeah, I guess if GTA 6 does not perform, I don't think mobile is going to help out the case. What do you think, Eric?
I mean, look. I think fundamentally Zynga was the worst acquisition in the gaming industry from a value loss perspective. They gave up almost 40% of the company for a declining business. Mm-hmm. They've already taken a $500 million impairment charge on the acquisition in the first quarter after it was closed. I mean, the fact that Strauss and those guys were not fired for this is just kind of a testimony in terms of Strauss's kind of position within the company or, you know, whatever. The truth of the matter is that, you know, App Annie saw them tracking down like about 14% in 22. They're down about 17% so far in calendar 23 off the down 14%. I mean, so they are basically heading to zero to some degree. Advertising is helping soften this a little bit, but they're still down about 5 to 10%. I think what you need to understand is that they promised after this acquisition that Zynga was going to be growing at 10% plus 10 to 11%, you know, ongoing. Right. And so they are literally 20% below their expectations at this point. Right. So, but a lot of that has already been priced into the stock. So that to be clear, I mean, people understand that this acquisition is not good. Right. But as you alluded to there, I'm hearing, Well, first of all, I'm really worried about fingerprinting because you're right. I think a lot of people have moved to fingerprinting in order to help with attribution and targeting. And that's going to be removed by the end of the year, both for mobile, for iOS, but then also for Android ultimately. And that's going to cause another downward trend for the mobile space overall, much less what's happening with Zynga. So while in the mobile space, we see a little bit of breathing room in the first 6 months of the year where we're only down about 3% year over year, once those things are put into place, then I think we'll see another decline in the business. And I think that will hurt Zynga as well. But I'm also hearing rumblings that Frank is preparing to leave. And without Frank leadership, I'm just not sure the business will ever stabilize, right? So I'm really worried about that. I don't think the bench is deep enough to really maintain and keep this thing, you know, this big ship going. And they have absolutely nothing in the pipeline that's meaningful. And their core business continues to decline. So it feels like something that's going to be down like 5 to 10% for the next 2 or 3 years. So they're right. They're not going to get any type of love from Zynga that I can see. And then the biggest thing that kind of from my experience with acquisitions that haven't worked out is that, you know, as you optimize for when you start to decline in revenue, you start optimizing around profitability, right? And as you optimize around profitability, you start to decrease spend, right? Which could continue the spiraling decline because successful games in this business are driven by user acquisition. And so the minute you start to remove user acquisition from the table, then you could continue to cut revenue and then ultimately continue to decline profitability. And then you have to reduce more costs. So as they cut more and more costs, I just think this becomes a more and more of a challenge for them to continue to grow, particularly to invest in new games, right? So anyway, I just don't really see a way out of this. And again, if Frank leaves, then that would even make it worse because they won't have a senior executive that's really supporting growth initiatives and spend against the business. So anyway, I don't know. Am I being way too negative on this, guys? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm going to get a little more negative. The part that I think that other folks maybe on the buy side are hinging against is like the huge uptick in developer headcount that Take-Two received with the acquisition of Zynga, right? Like headcount went up dramatically. And that this should spur innovation and the ability to create more games. But I think maybe Joe can touch on this a little better than I can. But there's a big difference between folks that are developing mobile games and then folks that are developing things that you think more about the Take-Two ecosystem, right? Like these big, fantastic open world shooters, core single player experiences that, you know, shock and awe with graphic fidelity and things like that. And then if we take a look at what Zynga has actually published or produced from an internal development standpoint over the last 10 years, like I have a hard time figuring out much of anything, right? There were a few casino titles that did over $100 million. They had some merge titles that did something in the high order of maybe 50, 60 million bucks, but they haven't had a breakout hit as long as I've been covering gaming in the stock market, which is, you know, 10 years now. It's going to be a tough call. And I think that it's probably more likely that they would have to do significant org cuts if Zynga continues to struggle, not deploying folks from core Zynga over to like high fidelity PC console type ecosystem projects. And I guess the last thing we'll touch on too is like the notion that perhaps Take-Two IP, of which they have, you know, arguably more than anybody else in the entire gaming ecosystem, publishing hits in a mobile form factor, which I think is another thing that we've discussed in this podcast before, but not always the best move. Those experiences are on PC and console for a reason, and they don't transition very easily to casual unless you have this really crazy core loop that just resonates with the IP. And those are few and far between, very, very low hit rate.
Yeah, I think to your point, Eric, I think that they're probably going to get a little bit of a pass with GTA 6 coming. And I think, but if you look at the soundness or the health of the business as of the last fiscal and today, it's not that great. And so, you know, certainly when we look at GTA 5 and from like fiscal 14 to 15, we just saw like a huge drop after GTA 5 launched. And so what happens, I think, 26 and out when, you know, all the revenue from GTA 6 starts to decline and you're really then again looking at the business, is this a healthy business or not? And I think to your point, Eric, they're going to have to manage this thing well, and they're going to have to figure out how to how to operate this company a little bit, little bit better in some way, whether through additional hits or through operating for cost.
I guess a part that we can also mention too is that there's this risk in being a little bit deeper in the name that you can kind of lose the, is it the forest for the trees, or whatever you say, like 26 and 27 estimates just don't matter in this environment. And right now, like I said, buy side expectations are off next year's EPS. We have a high degree of confidence that they're going higher because most of us believe that GTA 6 will be the biggest game of all time, if I could say that, at any point in time. But then, yeah, like after that, you know, there's a valid exercise that maybe people fade the stock if they don't think that there's confidence beyond that. But, you know, it'll take another 6-7 years for another cycle like this to happen. It's just a very intricate point in the company's history that happens every 5 or 6 or 7 years. And the Zynga thing may just be an afterthought, but it's certainly not going to be a tailwind.
Yeah, and I want to be clear on this. Actually, at the beginning of the year, I was once the news that Zynga was just kind of falling apart, that it wasn't a great acquisition, I got bulled up on the stock because I'm like, look, they're going to announce GTA this year, right? They have to, right? Because because of what I said earlier, it's like he knows he's looking down the barrel of a gun of a terrible year. He has to basically reinvigorate confidence in the investor base by suggesting that GTA is coming out next year. And so I'm actually bullish on the stock. As much as I talk trash about it, I think if you're an investor, like you buy this thing, right? The console generation is looking absolutely amazing. The hardware sales are tremendous, and then and the engagement's getting better and better, and games are just selling off the shelves constantly. So anyway, I'm still actually bullish on the stock despite my negative comments. But to your point, I think after this fact, after GTA comes out, like what to expect. And so the one thing I want to caution investors in, and this is like the CD Projekt type thing, is that they are selling GTA 6 into a much smaller install base than GTA 5, right? We are in the middle of the cycle, right? And you have to take a certain attach rate to the current hardware that's available when this thing comes out. And it is a much smaller number than what happened the first time. On top of that, they were able to continue to sell this game when next gen came out, right? So they were at the tail end of last cycle and adoption of the new cycle. And one of y'all said it earlier, is how many versions of GTA have you bought, right? Because people, they just double dipped, you know, on current gen and next gen and PC, right? Yeah, they triple, quadruple dipped in some cases, right? So this is a different calculus to some degree in terms of how many units they can do. 25, 30 million, that sounds like the right number for the first 12 months, right? But when people start going nutso and start talking about 50 million, 60 million, because they're trying to comp it against GTA 6, or five, excuse me. I think that's when things get a little dicey, right? So
just real quick on that, they've been better on PC like in the last couple of years relative to the launch of GTA 5. Does that affect you at all? Or is this, it's really still a console story and PC is incremental?
Well, the question is, do you think they do a simultaneous release on PC, right?
That really probably has more to do with the marketing and any exclusive deals they have with consoles, right? More so than... Like I feel like if there was no restrictions, they would, because they've had a lot of success on PC in the last, call it, 3 years.
There was also a piracy issue with PC that they are concerned about, that they want to have console have some legs. But you're right. You're probably right. It's part of money that Sony or either Microsoft or Sony are paying, most likely Sony.
Fair enough. I wanted to get into
PC will be another tailwind, though, obviously.
I wanted to get into something you talked about earlier, kind of this push by Take-Two to release a lot more games. You mentioned it in like the sports area with the arcade games, but overall, like they claim they have 52 games planned for release in the next 3 years, 17 immersive core games like NBA 2K and GTA 6, these indie games from Private Division, all these random mobile games that aren't probably going to do anything material, like Star Wars Hunters, which is already dead on arrival, and GTA Mobile, like, okay, whatever. And then these mid-core games. Does it make sense for them to be publishing all of these games that are going to sell 1 million units here, 2 million units there? Or I don't think it kind of is irrelevant. Like we've kind of said that already from the investment case, but like, wouldn't that money be better spent on just more bodies for GTA Online at this point?
Well, I would make two arguments. I'll answer quickly. I'll make two arguments. I think first of all, I think they have enough bodies on GTA. right? I think Rockstar is basically a one product studio. They're going from Red Dead Redemption, GTA, Red Dead Redemption, now GTA again, and then likely Red Dead Redemption, maybe, actually. I come to think of it, I don't know. Anyway, the problem is because that didn't do very well after release. So I think what these guys have not done a good job of is building capability to deliver new AAA experiences. I think they should have taken the GTA money and built new studios, even within Rockstar or without. I just don't think they've done a good job. And all their PR and investor relations nonsense around 90 games in development, 50 games in development is complete fucking bullshit. Okay. It's just absolute nonsense. Okay. And everyone can see through that. And what I said originally is like, investors don't give a shit about any of that, right? Like they want it to be true, but they know it's not, right? And I, in my opinion anyway. So I think they should have done a much better job of reinvesting some of the money that they've made on GTA on real AAA studios. And the studio that you were talking about with the ex-Sledgehammer guy, like that kind of thing, or what EA did with Respawn, acquire that studio, and now they have three or four studios working on new AAA experiences. Ubisoft, despite the fact that they spend way too much money, they have invested in tons of studios, right? I don't think Take-Two or Activision have done a really good job of that over the years, frankly. So yes, none of this stuff makes sense. You know, having an indie division, having a publishing division at all these days doesn't make sense. They need to refocus, right? You know, like what they should have been working on another soccer game, right? Or you know, another sports game, the real sports game, right? Not like Lego, right? I don't know. I think they could be doing a lot better on that side.
Yeah, I think there's like some nuance around these private labels. So EA Originals is another one. I like the creative quotient it injects into the industry. And I also like that it, you know, offers like jobs and funding to studios that are taking risks. I think It Takes Two was like an EA Originals title that was very well reviewed. But I think the lingering issue here is like those studios are again pushing towards, you know, box type sales, which again, good for the creative quotient, but not necessarily good for the financial outcomes portion. Investors are going to reward new experiences that have a live operations tail or even like a live operations fattening, right? Like you want to see an initial boost of box sales and then a huge, you know, revenue tailwind for the next two or three years. And really, like, there's only a few that have done that. And Rockstar GTA is the kind of golden ticket in the industry. Even like, you know, Call of Duty hasn't done that. They have a release every year, which has a short burst of live operations post, but then it's recycled every year. I can't pick very many games out of a hat that are able to exhibit that kind of financial profile. It's more like a SaaS stock than a gaming stock at that point. And that's what investors are going to reward with the higher multiple.
All right. So just so I understand in terms of the outlook for the company, so you guys are kind of positive till GTA 6 launch and post that, you guys are a little bit negative. Is that?
There's lots of issues, but they don't matter. Like GTA 6 is all that matters. And as long as that bogey is out there, that's what people are going to cling to. And we'll talk about it as well, but possibly an acquisition target. You know, I think that we can wrap up with that topic. But yeah, as long as GTA 6 is out there and NBA 2K keeps killing it, that's what, I mean, Chris said it well. It's like, that's kind of all that matters and everything is just a rounding error after that.
Yeah, it's a good question too. Like, do you think Take-Two is going to be a publicly traded company at the end of 2025? And if you look at the tea leaves, it's like, probably not. But you have to wonder too, is Zynga kind of like Unity's iron source and complicates things for a takeout? Not sure.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, anybody that would want to acquire something this big would probably want some kind of mobile, to say that they have mobile despite how it's performing. I don't know. You know, it's really hard to say. Like, who are the acquisition targets? Like Amazon, maybe, right? The Asian Sony company, Sony's just too big for Sony. And the Asian names, China names are completely off the table because they can't do acquisitions in the US. They're forced to do acquisitions in Europe.
Amazon makes a lot of sense, right? They've been investing in gaming to various degrees. And unlike Google, they didn't get in and pull out, right? And so it's kind of like, you know, with the assuming Microsoft Activision does go through, which it seems like it's happening at this point, if the antitrust headwind is not there, money's not really an issue for them. It's kind of the same case for all the big tech companies. I mean, Apple could do it, but that's not something they would do.
No.
Like, it's just not in their DNA. Or you start talking about the big media companies, like, that's a whole nother like Pandora's box to open. But like, Bob Iger is back through 2026 at Disney. He's getting paid basically based on share price appreciation. If you read his employment contract, what's going to get Disney stock up? Maybe it's a big acquisition of a gaming company. I don't know. But like, clearly he's only got a window to do something to boost the stock price to get paid. And so he's going to do whatever he thinks is going to be best to do that.
What's a better pairing than Little Mermaid and Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah.
I think EA makes more sense at Disney just from how things line up. But
yeah, EA definitely makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, looking further out, like, you know, when I think about growth opportunities for Take-Two, and for me, I am pretty negative on Take-Two just longer term, just because I have a lot of fears about the way that some of these Chinese companies like MiHoYo operate and how they systematically go and look for big targets. And when GTA 6 comes out, I do think they're going to like train their sights on Rockstar. But I don't know, in terms of growth, I mean, the only thing I really see is that because 60% of revenue is US, maybe some potential to expand internationally. A lot of Wall Street guys think that there's a lot of potential in GTA Online. But in terms of growth, how do you guys see, like, if you guys could convince me of a brighter outlook for Take-Two, what would that be?
I mean, if we take a look at, you know, this $8 billion target for next year, if you want to dream the dream, you have to start thinking about backing into 8.5-9 billion the year after, and maybe exiting 26 at like 10 billion. And that puts it in line with EA and Activision roughly in terms of top line. So does Take-Two have the roster of IP and talent to produce $10 billion of recurring revenue-ish, like recurring-ish revenue? Or do you think the more likely scenario is they revert back down to like a 5.5, 6, 7 kind of time frame? If you think that 5 to 7 is more likely in 2026, which, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, yeah, this stock is in trouble. So like, there has to be more strategic-y outcomes over the next 2 years, whether it's an acquisition, whether it's getting bought, whether it's redesigning the way that they make games to be more live operations focused, whether it's fixing Borderlands so it is like this beautiful live services thing that it should be. And I don't have a clear-cut answer for that because, like you said before, it's that they're just very cagey with their content lineup, and it's hard to back into that kind of stuff with that as the backdrop. I didn't answer your question, maybe, but like, you know, for right now, it's like everyone's going to dream the dream until that bubble pops, or if it pops. And right now, like that cycle around GTA 6, it is going to be the biggest game of all time when it comes out. Yeah,
yeah, I'm having trouble seeing the dream post GTA 6.
Yeah, GTA 7.
And well, I mean, there's two drivers that could continue the growth. I think NBA is kind of a smaller driver, although the popularity of that that league is increasing worldwide. So LATAM and Eastern Europe and China and Asia. So like they can continue to grow that franchise kind of in, you know, like a 10 to 15% a year. So that helps to some degree to stabilize stuff. But it's really GTA, right? Can they learn from all the crap they've been doing for the last, like, what? I don't know, 10. How long has it been? 10 years since this game came out? 12 years?
Been a decade.
Yeah.
So all this learning that they've gotten as a company, can they actually put that into GTA 6 and make a better mousetrap, right? Can build a better live service? I have to think the answer is yes, right? But but we'll see. The proof is in the pudding, right? To some degree. And I know this is not going to be very popular with the core people out there. But I think they need to do more pay to progress, you know, pay to win type mechanics, right? A deeper depth of spend in order to like really kind of leverage that core base of players that play GTA. So if they can really leverage that, then they could actually build a real like software as a service, like super core, hardcore, and then revenue could go through the roof and be maintained better than what they do with GTA. Because despite success with GTA 5, it was a shitty experience, right? Load times were fucking forever. Content drops were much, much in less frequent than they should have been. Depth of spend was actually relatively low. I mean, depending on who you ask, I suppose. There's a lot more that they can do with that. I don't want to go into a deep dive of monetization for GTA, but there's definitely more that they could do to make that a better service. And obviously, they never really released new content per se. They never really released increase the map size, which is part of what they're talking about doing, is making a much smaller map for the initial GTA and then expanding it going forward, which is a much, much smarter way of releasing content. So I think there's a lot they're thinking about doing that can keep this thing as a live service and grow revenue as well as profitability. And so I think that could be their avenue to maintain revenue and earnings. And I'm sure that's the bull case for a lot of investors out there.
It's going to be tough for them to grow sequentially. Whatever year GTA 6 comes out, unless they do release, March 2025 to meet their fiscal 2025, because then yes, they will grow sequentially in 26, but just because most of the unit sales will come in 26, right? But like whatever the year after the first 12 months of GTA 6 is, unless there is, I don't even know, like you mentioned it, BioShock and all those other games don't get you there. They're not going to get you 30 million units to offset GTA 6. I don't think GTA Online in its first year, I mean, that's just the nature of a live service. It's not going to offset $1 billion of revenue in its first year. Like it's going to scale up to that over time, unless basically they're recreating Fortnite in this massive, IP driven live service, but like that's just not in their DNA. Right. And so I'm kind of skeptical. I think that was mostly a carrot to, exactly as we said, like Zynga sucks. We're going to dangle GTA 6 and we'll give you, we're going to grow after that. Like, I think it's a carrot for investors and a carrot for potential acquirers. Like, I think Strauss is a smart guy and he sees the market really well. I also think he's been one of the more rational CEOs in the space. Like when VR was a thing, he poo-pooed it when everyone else was talking it up. When NFTs were a thing and everyone else was talking it up, he poo-pooed it. Like cloud gaming, he's been, kind of just negative on forever, right? So I do think he's been one of the more rational guys from that perspective. Chris, I see you have thoughts.
No, I see. The thing is, I agree with everything you're saying, but this Zynga acquisition makes no fucking sense to me. It's like, how in the hell was he duped into buying something so not valuable? I honestly, at the time, I was basically saying, I think it was all ego, right? He has always wanted to create a competitor to Activision and EA to be the same size and scale as those. And I think he felt like he couldn't do it without mobile. And Zynga was the only acquisition that could get him there, I suppose. But
no, I agree with that. I think he had a lot of credibility up until that point. And even before that, he kept saying, we can build a mobile business organically and with small tuck-in acquisitions. And every time they bought one of these little companies that didn't matter, it was, are you going to buy something bigger? And he kept saying, no. And then they bought Zynga. So I agree with you. Like he hurt his credibility and he hurt his stature with investors with that. Even ignoring the fact that the mobile market tanked after they announced the deal and they literally top ticked the mobile market. Like,
yeah,
even if Apple hadn't killed the mobile market, you'd still probably look back on it and say, you bought a business that never has grown organically, doesn't know how to grow organically. And then you add the Apple effect and the macro environment of mobile games. It was just horribly timed, bad acquisition. And
really bad advice. Whoever was like advising them, whether it was Goldman or, I don't know who it was, but it sounds like a Goldman thing or a McKenzie where, you throw a PowerPoint together and you say, well, 1 + 1 = 2.5 or whatever. And you're like, well, fuck off. You don't know anything about mobile and the fact that these businesses are going to the shitters right now. And they did this crazy acquisition for 40% of the company. Dude, they gave up 40%. I mean, that's crazy, right?
It was JP Morgan and Liontree advised Take-Two. And Liontree was that startup advisory company that was big in media deals.
What the fuck do they know about gaming, right? I mean, Jesus, like it's crazy. It is so crazy that actually happened, Like if they had waited like 3 months even, dude, they would have gotten it for like $6, like half. Right, because the stock was on its way to zero.
I would say it's the one thing
anybody
that I
could have saw that. You talk to any advisor, anybody. I was talking about this on the podcast for like a year, right? About how crappy Zynga was, and anybody could have told them that, right?
I think we have to look just at a moment in time of like, and this is not to say that it was a good deal or anything. There was a lot of competitive tension in the M&A space for assets and scarcity value and things like that. It doesn't right the wrong, but I can see and I saw how that kind of thing was firing up buyers at the time, right?
But
by no means was this a value add for the organization. Like,
right. He lost the EA, he lost the Codemaster deal, right? Because he had a deal on the table and he lost that. There was another deal he lost too. I'm not remembering it for some reason.
Well, then EA bought Glue and he's like, well, shit, we have to buy Zynga now.
Right. Which Glue was the second worst acquisition ever in the video game space, right?
I might say it first, but.
Sorry, Brent.
No, dude, I don't care, dude. That was like so bad. Like the value just fell apart within like the first 3 months, you know?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, come on. There's a little bit of FOMO and there was a little bit of like ego about losing deals to EA. And he felt like he had to make a move. And I just think he got really, really bad advice from JP Morgan and whoever else advised him on that deal. Because they clearly don't know what they were doing at the time, because it was so obvious. Like that's what I just want to make sure that everyone knows that it was really, really obvious that this was not a good deal, like from the get go, and the stock got crushed because of it. So I don't know.
And I think a lot of it had to do with just kind of reverting back to, hey, look what Activision did with King, right? In a different era. The pushback on that deal at the time was like, oh, this King asset will never trade in line with console PC multiples. And yet, you know, it did over time. And that has the probability of hoodwinking because, you know, it was a moment in time.
That is true.
Yeah, but Zynga's never also going to have a 40% EBITDA margin.
That is also
King
true.
Prints yeah. money.
Right.
Because, and Bobby, of all the stuff they said they were going to do with King that failed, including freaking make a shooter, which in hindsight, you know, it makes total sense for a company that makes match three games to make a shooter. But, you know, the one thing they did was rein in costs and they killed a lot of the smaller games, and the margins and the money that King has printed with largely flat revenue since they bought it has been really good. Like, yeah, they didn't meet all of the things they said they were going to do, but at least it prints money.
Right. But okay. I think you're underselling what King has done, because they basically had this huge library of games and then they narrowed it down to basically two, maybe three, two and a half, right?
Yep.
And they just live ops the shit out of it, released more content, got better at monetization and at advertising. So they've managed that business and continue to grow it 5 to 10% a year for the last like, you know, decade, and do it very profitably. So it's been a huge thing for Bobby, which was a great acquisition at the time, but also the management team did a good job of managing it. Now, they didn't do anything else, to your point, but that's good enough.
I remember that slide deck. It had like, here's the three things we're going to do to drive value from King. And then it was literally the same three things that were in the slide deck for Take-Two and Zynga. And that made me laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to cross-sell IP.
Yeah, any synergies that you talk about, product synergies on these deals, is just complete bullshit right from the get-go. Like, I can tell you that, right? Any acquisition you see that says product synergies, ignore. There's just that does not happen in this space. Every studio organization is accounted for, right? Studios don't want to work on your bullshit IP, right? They don't have the capability of doing anything else. Like, there's so many reasons that doesn't work.
That's except Sega and Rovio. That's going to be a home run.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like Sega. Romeo's going to leverage Sega IP to bring whole new monetization and capabilities to Romeo.
Angry
for
Bird
sure.
Sonic the Hedgehog edition.
Angry Sonic.
But to conclude, for me anyway, I think Take-Two is an interesting stock for the next 2 years until when GTA releases. And what you should be watching for is what the potential is and what expectations are for the game. Because if you start hearing the $50 million unit mark, I think you got to like pause a little bit. And then also got to keep track of what they're doing from an online perspective and how they're going to monetize the audience better than they did previously. And more regular cadence of content, et cetera, et cetera. Like, those are the things that I'm kind of watching out for. And then the only other one is any type of litigation around loot boxes and, you know, and monetization. But I think we're okay from that perspective.
All right.
Yeah, I also mentioned too that this isn't like a unique challenge to Take-Two, right? This is not piling on by any sort. This debate happens for every video game company and pretty much any software company, semiconductor company in this space. The out year, 2-3 year growth trajectory is always a big question for investors. So just doing the work.
All right. Well, guys, is that any remaining thoughts, or should we call it a day?
Since we still have 30 minutes, now we can dive into the dynamics of the golf simulation market, right? And talk about the PGA Tour 2K versus EA.
Yeah, the total market of 2 million units worldwide that they're like fighting over tooth and nail.
I just remember when these games got announced and you went on DOF, the podcast, and ranted about golf games for 10 minutes or whatever.
Dude, I bought it. I fucking love it.
Me too.
Golf
I love
games.
It.
Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying it's 2 million units, right? You're begging for scraps, dude, if you're trying to go after a market. And the cost of making those games is not immaterial either, because it is quite complicated to get all the different views of these real life courses and render them in real time in 3D, you know, and the players' likenesses and blah, 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 all the licenses associated with the PGA. Like, it's a waste of freaking money, dude. It's like a tennis game. Like, tennis is like a stupid sport for that. Or why don't you just build cricket games? You know, like, fuck that, dude. No one gives a shit about cricket, you know, or rugby. We've done this all. I was at EA. We did all of this stuff, and it was a disaster. Absolute disaster. And golf is just the same. Baseball is not much further up the food chain of sports, right? It's football, basketball, and soccer. You know, that's about it, right?
All right.
And what?
So no pickleball video games coming?
Dude, pickleball, dude. Jesus Christ. Dude, that's like every ER's nightmare, right? It's like how many like 60 plus are going into the ER with pickleball injuries, dude? That's the dumbest sport ever. Ever.
UBS said that $400 million more of hospital visits from pickleball industries injuries this year.
Yeah, so go long, like emergency medicine. Providers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
All right, guys. Well, you know, I learned a lot about Take-Two. It's great having you guys opine with all of the various thoughts. But thank you very much, Eric, for joining us. And for our audience, we will catch you next time. Bye, everybody.